4. I have said something of this gentleman's outward appearance. He was a tall, curly-haired, thick-set fellow, about 40, with a purplish, rather bloated and flabby face, with cheeks that quivered at every movement of his head, with little, bloodshot eyes that were sometimes rather crafty, with moustaches and side whiskers, and with an incipient double chin, fleshy and rather unpleasant-looking. But what was most striking about him was the fact that he appeared now wearing a dress coat and clean linen. There are people on whom clean linen is almost unseemly, as Liputin had once said when Stepan Trofimovitch reproached him in jest for being untidy. The captain had perfectly new black gloves, too, of which he held the right one in his hand, while the left, tightly stretched and unbuttoned, covered part of the huge, fleshy fist in which he held a brand-new, glossy round hat, probably worn for the first time that day. It appeared, therefore, that the garb of love of which he had shouted to Shatov the day before really did exist. All this, that is, the dress coat and clean linen, had been procured by Liputin's advice with some mysterious object in view, as I found out later. There was no doubt that his coming now in a hired carriage was at the instigation and with the assistance of someone else. It would never have dawned on him, nor could he by himself have succeeded in dressing, getting ready, and making up his mind in 3/4 of an hour, even if the scene in the porch of the cathedral had reached his ears at once. He was not drunk, but was in the dull, heavy, dazed condition of a man suddenly awakened after many days of drinking. It seemed as though he would be drunk again if one were to put one's hands on his shoulders and rock him to and fro once or twice. He was hurrying into the drawing-room, but stumbled over a rug near the doorway. Marya Timofeyevna was helpless with laughter. He looked savagely at her, and suddenly took a few rapid steps towards Varvara Petrovna.
"I have come, madam," he blared out like a trumpet blast.
"Be so good, sir, as to take a seat there, on that chair," said Varvara Petrovna, drawing herself up. "I shall hear you as well from there, and it will be more convenient for me to look at you from here." The captain stopped short, looking blankly before him. He turned, however, and sat down on the seat indicated close to the door. An extreme lack of self-confidence and at the same time insolence and a sort of incessant irritability were apparent in the expression of his face. He was horribly scared, that was evident, but his self-conceit was wounded, and it might be surmised that his mortified vanity might on occasion lead him to any effrontery, in spite of his cowardice. He was evidently uneasy at every movement of his clumsy person. We all know that when such gentlemen are brought by some marvellous chance into society, they find their worst ordeal in their own hands, and the impossibility of disposing them becomingly, of which they are conscious at every moment. The captain sat rigid in his chair, with his hat and gloves in his hands, and his eyes fixed with a senseless stare on the stern face of Varvara Petrovna. He would have liked, perhaps, to have looked about more freely, but he could not bring himself to do so yet. Marya Timofeyevna, apparently thinking his appearance very funny, laughed again, but he did not stir. Varvara Petrovna ruthlessly kept him in this position for a long time, a whole minute, staring at him without mercy. "In the first place, allow me to learn your name from yourself," Varvara Petrovna pronounced, in measured and impressive tones.
"Captain Lebyadkin," thundered the captain. "I have come, madam."
He made a movement again. "Allow me," Varvara Petrovna checked him again. "Is this unfortunate person who interests me so much really your sister?"
"My sister, madam, who has escaped from control, for she is in a certain condition."
He suddenly faltered and turned crimson.
"Don't misunderstand me, madam," he said, terribly confused. "Her own brother's not going to throw mud at her. In a certain condition doesn't mean in such a condition, in the sense of an injured reputation. In the last stage, he suddenly broke off.
"Sir," said Varvara Petrovna, raising her head, "in this condition," he concluded suddenly, tapping the middle of his forehead with his finger.
A pause followed. "And has she suffered in this way for long?" asked Varvara Petrovna with a slight drawl.
"Madam, I have come to thank you for the generosity you showed in the porch in a Russian brotherly way."
"Brotherly?"
"I mean, not brotherly, but simply in the sense that I am my sister's brother, and I believe, madam," he went on more hurriedly, turning crimson again, "I am not so uneducated as I may appear at first sight in your drawing-room. My sister and I are nothing, madam, compared with the luxury we observe here, having enemies who slander us besides. But on the question of reputation, Lebyadkin is proud, madam, and I've come to repay with thanks. Here is money, madam."
At this point he pulled out a pocket-book, drew out of it a bundle of notes, and began turning them over with trembling fingers in a perfect fury of impatience. It was evident that he was in haste to explain something, and indeed it was quite necessary to do so. But probably feeling himself that his fluster with the money made him look even more foolish, he lost the last traces of self-possession. The money refused to be counted. His fingers fumbled helplessly, and to complete his shame, a green note escaped from the pocket-book and fluttered in zigzags onto the carpet.
20 rubles, madam."
He leapt up suddenly with the roll of notes in his hand, his face perspiring with discomfort. Noticing the note which had dropped on the floor, he was bending down to pick it up, but for some reason, overcome by shame, he dismissed it with a wave.
"For your servants, madam, for the footman who picks it up. Let them remember my sister."
"I cannot allow that," Varvara Petrovna brought out hurriedly, even with some alarm.
"In that case—"
He bent down, picked it up, flushing crimson, and suddenly, going up to Varvara Petrovna, held out the notes he had counted.
"What's this?"
she cried, really alarmed at last, and positively shrinking back in her chair. Mavriky Nikolaevich, Stepan Trofimovich, and I all stepped forward.
"Don't be alarmed, don't be alarmed. I'm not mad, by God, I'm not mad,"
the captain kept asseverating excitedly.
"Yes, sir, you're out of your senses."
"Madam, she's not at all as you suppose. I am an insignificant link. Oh, madam, wealthy are your mansions, but poor is the dwelling of Maria Anonima, my sister, whose maiden name was Lebyadkin, but whom we'll call Anonima for the time, only for the time, madam, for God himself will not suffer it forever. Madam, you gave her 10 rubles, and she took it because it was from you, madam. Do you hear, madam? From no one else in the world would this Maria Anonima take it, or her grandfather, the officer killed in the Caucasus before the very eyes of Yermolov, would turn in his grave. But from you, madam, from you she will take anything. But with one hand she takes it, and with the other she holds out to you 20 rubles, by way of subscription to one of the benevolent societies in Petersburg and Moscow, of which you are a member. For you published yourself, madam, in the Moscow News, that you are ready to receive subscriptions in our town, and that anyone may subscribe."
The captain suddenly broke off. He breathed hard, as though after some difficult achievement. All he said about the benevolent society had probably been prepared beforehand, perhaps under Liputin's supervision. He perspired more than ever. Drops literally trickled down his temples. Varvara Petrovna looked searchingly at him.
"The subscription list," she said severely, "is always downstairs in charge of my porter. There you can enter your subscriptions if you wish to, and so I beg you to put your notes away and not to wave them in the air. That's right. I beg you also to go back to your seat. That's right. I'm very sorry, sir, that I made a mistake about your sister and gave her something as though she were poor when she is so rich. There's only one thing I don't understand. why she can only take from me and no one else. You so insisted upon that that I should like a full explanation.
Madam, that is a secret that may be buried only in the grave, answered the captain.
Why? Varvara Petrovna asked, not quite so firmly.
Madam, madam.
He relapsed into gloomy silence, looking on the floor, laying his right hand on his heart. Varvara Petrovna waited, not taking her eyes off him.
Madam, he roared suddenly, will you allow me to ask you one question? Only one, but frankly, directly, like a Russian, from the heart.
Kindly do so.
Have you ever suffered, madam, in your life?
You simply mean to say that you have been or are being ill-treated by someone.
Madam, madam!
He jumped up again, probably unconscious of doing so, and struck himself on the breast.
Here, in this bosom, so much has accumulated, so much that God himself will be amazed when it is revealed at the day of judgment.
A strong expression.
Madam, I speak perhaps irritably.
Don't be uneasy. I know myself when to stop you.
May I ask you another question, madam?
Ask another question.
Can one die simply from the generosity of one's feelings?
I don't know, as I've never asked myself such a question.
You don't know. You've never asked yourself such a question, he said with pathetic irony. Well, if that's it, if that's it. Be still, my despairing heart.
And he struck himself furiously on the chest. He was by now walking about the room again. It is typical of such people to be utterly incapable of keeping their desires to themselves. They have, on the contrary, an irresistible impulse to display them in all their unseemliness as soon as they arise. When such a gentleman gets into a circle in which he is not at home, he usually begins timidly. But you have only to give him an inch, and he will at once rush into impertinence. The captain was already excited. He walked about waving his arms and not listening to questions, talked about himself very, very quickly, so that sometimes his tongue would not obey him, and without finishing one phrase he passed to another. It is true he was probably not quite sober. Moreover, Lizaveta Nikolaevna was sitting there too, and though he did not once glance at her, her presence seemed to overexcite him terribly. That, however, is only my supposition. There must have been some reason which led Varvara Petrovna to resolve to listen to such a man in spite of her repugnance. Praskovya Ivanovna was simply shaking with terror, though I believe she really did not quite understand what it was about. Stepan Trofimovitch was trembling too, but that was, on the contrary, because he was disposed to understand everything and exaggerate it. Mavriky Nikolaevich stood in the attitude of one ready to defend all present. Liza was pale, and she gazed fixedly with wide-open eyes at the wild captain. Shartov sat in the same position as before, but, what was strangest of all, Marya Timofyevna had not only ceased laughing, but had become terribly sad. She leaned her right elbow on the table, and, with a prolonged, mournful gaze, watched her brother declaiming. Darya Pavlovna alone seemed to me calm. "All that is nonsensical allegory," said Varvara Petrovna, getting angry at last. "You haven't answered my question. Why? I insist on an answer."
"I haven't answered. Why? You insist on an answer. Why?" repeated the captain, winking. "That little word why has run through all the universe from the first day of creation, and all nature cries every minute to its creator, why? And for 7,000 years it has had no answer. And must Captain Lebyadkin alone answer? And is that justice, madam?"
"That's all nonsense and not to the point," cried Varvara Petrovna, getting angry and losing patience. "That's allegory. Besides, you express yourself too sensationally, sir, which I consider impertinence."
"Madam,
the captain went on, not hearing. "I should have liked, perhaps, to be called Ernest, yet I am forced to bear the vulgar name Ignat. Why is that, do you suppose? I should have liked to be called Prince de Montbar, yet I am only Lebyadkin, derived from a swan. Why is that? I am a poet, madam, a poet in soul, and might be getting 1,000 rubles at a time from a publisher, yet I am forced to live in a pig-pail. Why? Why, madam? To my mind, Russia is a freak of nature and nothing else."
"Can you really say nothing more definite?"
"I can read you the poem, The Cockroach, madam."
"What?"
"Madam, I'm not mad yet. I shall be mad, no doubt I shall be, but I'm not so yet. Madam, a friend of mine, a most honourable man, has written a Krylov's fable called The Cockroach. May I read it?"
"You want to read some fable of Krylov's?"
"No, it's not a fable of Krylov's I want to read. It's my fable, my own composition. Believe me, madam, without offence, I'm not so uneducated and depraved as not to understand that Russia can boast of a great fable writer, Krylov, to whom the Minister of Education has raised a monument in the summer gardens for the diversion of the young. Here, madam, you ask me why. The answer is at the end of this fable, in letters of fire."
"Read your fable."
"Lived a cockroach in the world. Such was his condition. In a glass he chanced to fall, full of fly perdition."
"Heavens! What does it mean?" cried Varvara Petrovna.
"That's when flies get into a glass in the summertime," the captain explained hurriedly, with the irritable impatience of an author interrupted in reading. "Then it is perdition to the flies, any fool can understand. Don't interrupt, don't interrupt. You'll see, you'll see."
He kept waving his arms.
"But he squeezed against the flies. They woke up and cursed him, raised to Jove their angry cries. The glass is full to bursting. In the middle of the din came along Nikifor, fine old man, and looking in from Lebied, a swan. I haven't quite finished it, but no matter. I'll tell it in words," the captain rattled on. "Nikifor takes the glass, and in spite of their outcry, empties away the whole stew, flies, beetles, and all, into the pig-pail, which ought to have been done long ago. But observe, madam, observe. The cockroach doesn't complain. That's the answer to your question. Why?" he cried triumphantly. "The cockroach does not complain. As for Nikifor, he typifies nature," he added, speaking rapidly and walking complacently about the room.
Varvara Petrovna was terribly angry. "And allow me to ask you about that money said to have been received from Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, and not to have been given to you, about which you dared to accuse a person belonging to my household."
"It's a slander!" roared Lebyadkin, flinging up his right hand tragically.
"No, it's not a slander."
"Madam, there are circumstances that force one to endure family disgrace rather than proclaim the truth aloud. Lebyadkin will not blab, madam."
He seemed dazed. He was carried away. He felt his importance. He certainly had some fancy in his mind, but now he wanted to insult someone, to do something nasty to show his power.
"Ring, please, Stepan Trofimovitch," Varvara Petrovna asked him.
"Lebyadkin's cunning, madam," he said, winking with his evil smile. "He's cunning, but he too has a weak spot. He too at times is in the portals of passions, and these portals are the old military hussar's bottle, celebrated by Denis Davidov. So when he is in those portals, madam, he may happen to send a letter in verse, a most magnificent letter, but which afterwards he would have wished to take back with the tears of all his life, for the feeling of the beautiful is destroyed. But the bird has flown. You won't catch it by the tail.
In those portals now, madam, Lebyadkin may have spoken about an honourable young lady, in the honourable indignation of a soul revolted by wrongs, and his slanderers have taken advantage of it. But Lebyadkin is cunning, madam, and in vain a malignant wolf sits over him every minute, filling his glass and waiting for the end. Lebyadkin won't blab, and at the bottom of the bottle he always finds instead Lebyadkin's cunning. But enough, oh, enough, madam. Your splendid halls might belong to the noblest in the land, but the cockroach will not complain. Observe that. Observe that he does not complain, and recognize his noble spirit.
At that instant, a bell rang downstairs from the porter's room, and almost at the same moment Alexei Yegorych appeared in response to Stepan Trofimovitch's ring, which he had somewhat delayed answering. The correct old servant was unusually excited.
"Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch has graciously arrived this moment and is coming here," he pronounced, in reply to Varvara Petrovna's questioning glance.
I particularly remember her at that moment. At first she turned pale, but suddenly her eyes flashed. She drew herself up in her chair with an air of extraordinary determination. Everyone was astounded indeed. The utterly unexpected arrival of Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, who was not expected for another month, was not only strange from its unexpectedness, but from its fateful coincidence with the present moment. Even the captain remained standing like a post in the middle of the room with his mouth wide open, staring at the door with a fearfully stupid expression. And behold, from the next room, a very large and long apartment, came the sound of swiftly approaching footsteps. Little, exceedingly rapid steps. Someone seemed to be running, and that someone suddenly flew into the drawing-room. Not Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, but a young man who was a complete stranger to all.